All right, we continue our series on rapture prequels, which are, hey, see you later.
Yep.
Seeing, there's a rapture prequel right there. All of a sudden he was here and then he was gone. It's like an illustration right there. I think it might be a little faster than that. 1 minute Brett was here and the next minute he was gone. Wow. Man, this is I'm telling you, it's a powerful Bible study already. You don't get illustrations like that every day. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. Oh, by the way, we're going to look at Daniel chapter 3. It's really, you know, we're using scripture as a background, as a backdrop to look at types. So, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, first raided Jerusalem in about 605 BC. He took away with him some of the foremost citizens. Among them were four teenagers, Daniel and his three friends, known to us by their Babylonian names mostly, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The boys were selected for service in the royal court. Daniel excelled and over time rose to a position second only to Nebuchadnezzar in the government of Babylon. We're in a great place to discover a rapture prequel for the following reasons. First of all, Daniel has more to say about the tribulation and the Antichrist than any other Old Testament book. And second, Daniel 11, later on in this book, includes a greater number of prophecies already fulfilled than any other single chapter in the Bible, which is something I didn't know until I read it. Thanks to Wilmington's Guide to the Bible. And if Wilmington doesn't, whatever Wilmington says, it must be true. It's gone unchallenged all these many years. As the book opens in chapter 1, Daniel and his posse are being groomed for service in Babylon. The trouble was, of course, that the food they're provided violated dietary laws of the Jewish faith. And so they asked to be excused from eating the prohibited foods and instead be given a meager vegetarian diet. As a side note, a lot of people, therefore, get into this meager vegetarian Daniel diet, but the Jews, I never understood all that, because the Jews were commanded to eat meat. They were able to eat meat. There were just certain foods they couldn't eat. They weren't vegetarians, so I don't know how these people who keep the law conclude that you have to be a vegetarian when these guys were eating quail, for one thing, you know. So anyway, they had this meager vegetarian diet, I think in the King James called pulse. Their handlers feared retribution from Nebuchadnezzar if the boys deteriorated, but they convinced them to try the diet, and after the trial period, they were healthier and more robust than all the other young trainees. Now, in chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. He asks his wise men to interpret the dream, but since he is skeptical about their true wisdom, he sort of thinks that they're charlatans. He refused to tell them the dream. It seems unfair to them, but fair to him. He said, well, if you're in touch with the supernatural, then tell me the dream and the interpretation. And then he threatened to kill them all. Daniel stepped in and said that his God could reveal both the dream and its meaning, which God did, and it gained him an audience with the king. In the dream, the king had seen a statue with a head of gold, chest and arms of silver, belly and thighs of bronze, legs of iron, and feet of iron mingled with clay. Then a giant stone cut by supernatural means struck the feet, toppling the entire image, and it filled the whole earth. Daniel gave the interpretation as well. He said that the head of gold was Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom of Babylon. After that kingdom fell, an inferior kingdom of silver would arise. We know it as the Medo-Persian Empire. Just as the statue's arms of silver were joined by the chest of silver, so the Medes and the Persians had been joined by Cyrus, or would be joined by Cyrus, to defeat Babylon. Next would come the Bronze Kingdom, Greece. The fourth kingdom, represented by the iron legs, was Rome, and this kingdom would eventually exist as 10 toes, or 10 kingdoms, or 10 regions, in an attempt to rule the world. During the reign of that final kingdom, God would come and establish his kingdom. That's the meaning of the stone, which comes and hits the statue and destroys it and fills the earth. And this is one of the reasons why we talk about a future revived Roman Empire existing in the last days before the return of Jesus to establish his millennial kingdom. Nebuchadnezzar was so impressed that he elevated Daniel to his high position in the government. Nebuchadnezzar gave a verbal acknowledgement that Daniel's God was the true king over all other earthly rulers. His new respect for God did not last long, and we read in chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits, width 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather together the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, all the officials of the provinces, to come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So all those guys came, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then a herald cried out aloud, "To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace." Now you remember God had told Nebuchadnezzar he was the head of gold to be followed by less prominent kingdoms, but that wasn't good enough for him. He made a statue of himself entirely of gold, as if his kingdom was going to last. This was a problem for the Jewish boys. Verse 7, "So at that time when all the people heard the music," verse 8, "therefore that time certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, 'O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the music,'" verse 11, "'and does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up.' Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, 'Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Now, if you are ready at the time you hear the sound of the music, I have made good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fire furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands?'" Non-believers have such short memories. The God who would deliver them was the one who had told him his dream as well as the interpretation. He was the God who Nebuchadnezzar had acknowledged just a few verses earlier. So verse 16, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, 'O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. He will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up.'" Some of the greatest insight into suffering in the will of God and walking by faith is in their response. It makes for a good study, and it should be our theology of suffering, really. God is able to deliver me. He's able to heal me. But if not, I don't really care, because I still walk in the will of God, and it's whatever God decides. It's kind of like in a very different way, but it's interesting. We were talking a few weeks ago about the gifts and Paul and his shipwreck, you know. Perfect time for the gift of miracles, you know. And God said, no, this is a great time for the word of knowledge, you know. We're going to go ahead and crash and sink and go on to Malta. And it's like, okay, so God can calm the storm or he can take me through the storm. And either way, I'm going to serve him. Verse 19, "Then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. He commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flames of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men fell down, bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished. He arose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, 'Did we not cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire?' They answered and said to the king, 'True, O king.' 'Look,' he answered, 'I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the form of the 4th is like the Son of God.'" By the way, I love the critics of Daniel. There's a there's a criticism here that says that in these ancient furnaces you could find spots that were cool because of the architecture of it. There would be a pocket in which you were safe, you know. No one's tested that. No. Look, he answered, I see four men, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spoke, saying, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. I don't know how they got there. They must have been a corridor. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came from the midst of the fire, and all these guys gathered together, and they saw these men on whom the bodies, the fire had no power. The hair of their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not on them. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him. And they have frustrated the king's word and yielded their bodies that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that any people, nation, or language which speaks anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made an ash heap, because there is no other God who can deliver like this. Then the king promoted these boys in the province of Babylon. Now the fourth man in the furnace, of course, an Old Testament appearance of Jesus Christ walking with them through their fiery trial. Lots of great devotional insight there. Looking at the types, we would say that Nebuchadnezzar and his statue are typical of the future Antichrist and the false image he has set up of himself in the last days. The exact midpoint of the Great Tribulation really is his demand that everyone bow down and worship his image. It is at that midpoint that tremendous persecution is focused upon the children of Israel. Up until then, they are protected by him. They've rebuilt their temple. They're enjoying renewed worship in that sense. It's an event called by Jesus and Daniel the abomination of desolation. It's when Jesus said that if you were in Israel, you should flee for your very lives without stopping to take anything out into the wilderness. It's going to be a rough time overall. Satanic persecution against the nation of Israel. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are thus typical of the Jews who must bow or face the fiery persecution of the Antichrist. We know from the book of the Revelation that many Jews will be kept safe through the fiery trial until the return of Jesus. So that brings us to Daniel. He is conspicuously absent in chapter 3. Where was he? There aren't really a lot of possibilities, and it really comes down to two main possibilities. Number one, Daniel isn't mentioned because he backslid and bowed down. Or number two, Daniel, as second to Nebuchadnezzar, was away on state business in a time when travel would take months and months to accomplish. No one believes for a moment that Daniel bowed. He is one of the truest, purest, unblemished characters in all the Word of God. And so if he didn't bow, we have to conclude that he was just gone during this fiery trial for his friends. And so he becomes, for those of us who are pre-tribulational and premillennial, another raptural prequel. He represents, in this typology, the church, which is absent, conspicuously absent from the earth, while the Antichrist, Nebuchadnezzar, unleashes his reign of terror upon the Jews, represented by the three boys. So, again, types do not prove doctrine, but once you have a doctrine, it's interesting to see the types in the Old Testament. And you really can't see these kinds of types with any other doctrine of the end times. They don't work. You can say, well, where was Daniel? And you say, that doesn't work if there's no kingdom and all of this kind of thing. So very interesting types. Daniel, probably the most prominent, the most famous next to Enoch. We've seen some obscure ones, some more famous ones, but Daniel, a very good one. Where was Daniel? He's representing the church in heaven with Jesus Christ.